The Lab on Digital Societies.
Welcome to the new episode of The Lab on Digital Societies. I am your host, Christoph Gyodi, from the Faculty of Economic Sciences and The Lab at the University of Warsaw. And it is my great pleasure to talk with Agustin Kokola-Gantz. Agustin is a research fellow at the Institute of Geography and Spatial Planning at the University of Lisbon. Before joining the University of Lisbon, he was a Marie Curie Fellow at the School of Geography at the University of Leeds. He holds a PhD in Human Geography from Cardiff University and a PhD in Art History from University of Barcelona. His research lies at the intersection of urban and tourism studies and pays particular attention to the short-term rental market, gentrification, and tourism-led displacement. Welcome to the show, Agustin.
Hello. Thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, really, really nice to have you on the show. And today's topic is short-term rentals, one of your main research interests. And you have been studying short-term rentals and also their impact on the real estate market. Can you explain to us how platforms like Airbnb change the game for renters, buyers, and the real estate market in general?
Well, such a big question. So I want to provide a bit of context first. Basically, my research and the places where I have lived has been mainly in Barcelona and in Lisbon. And especially in Barcelona, the like short-term rentals existed before Airbnb. So there is a long history of short-term rentals as a product, like an alternative to hotels. Airbnb was created in 2008 and popularized this product, the short-term rental. And so it's a platform that connects landlords with renters. And so now housing supply, which is local, like in Lisbon or Barcelona, is available online through this platform. So it facilitates the transaction between these two parties. Apart from this, in cities such as Lisbon and Barcelona, tourism was like a solution for the recession after the 2008 economic crisis. And so also the state facilitated a lot this market. They liberalized the rental laws in both places and created a system, like a legal framework that made possible the growth of this market. And it's also interesting to say that even before Airbnb in Barcelona, short-term rentals were already a point of contestation by social movements. So there was already, Barcelona is a mature destination. The question of over-tourism in Barcelona has a long history since the beginning of the 21st century. And before Airbnb, there were already people in the city center complaining about the growth of short-term rentals, and the impacts on housing markets, and also on neighborhood life. And just to finalize this contextualization, just to say that in cities such as Lisbon, nowadays this market has grown so much that we have neighborhoods in the city center where 70% of homes has a short-term rental title. In Barcelona, it's not so big. In Barcelona, there are 9,500 short-term rental licenses. In Lisbon, there are 20,000, and these 20,000 are mainly in the city center, which is basically a de facto tourist district. And so going back to your question, what happened for renters and for buyers? So for renters, obviously, this is a big issue, because when Airbnb started to grow, that was in 2013, 14, 15, in both cities we saw a process in which landlords were replacing tenants with visitors. And so people was basically evicted from homes, and now landlords went into the short-term rental market. So this is a big question. But in relation to this, there is another question, which is the lack of housing available for rent in these touristified neighborhoods. As I mentioned before, in the city center of Lisbon, the big majority of housing supply is on Airbnb. And so to find a house to rent in these places is mainly impossible. It's very, very, very difficult. And it's not just evictions and lack of supply, but also this had an impact on housing prices. Obviously, we have more or less, we estimate that landlords can take double the profit in the short-term rental market that in the traditional rental market. And so, of course, this has an impact on inflates housing prices in general. On the other side, so we have the landlords and the buyers, not just buyers, but also landlords who bought in the past and now replace tenants with visitors. And so these property owners, so now the profits they are making are bigger than before. Here we have a very important point, which is the inequality between landlord and tenant. So this inequality is increasing a lot, and that inequality has increased a lot, especially in the last decade, not just because of Airbnb, but Airbnb plays an important role. And then the question of investors, so people who buy homes because of the short-term rental market. So we are seeing different types of investors entering in the housing market because of short-term rentals, and this is a new thing. So in general, I think Airbnb have consolidated a process in which the housing market is seen as an asset class for different profiles of investors. This, of course, existed before, but existed before in cities like Paris, London, Amsterdam, New York, etc., big global cities, but not in cities such as, let's say, Porto, Palermo, cities like where, like, secondary cities in southern Europe were not a safe investment for people looking for a place to deposit their capital. And now, because of short-term rentals, these places have become a safe investment for these people. So basically, individual investors can buy a home, even they can buy, ask for a mortgage and repay the mortgage in 10, 15 years because of the short-term rental, when before it was like 30 years, 35 years in the traditional rental market. So this is basically accelerating this bubble of asking credit to buy homes, and which actually was the bubble that exploded in 2008. So I think Airbnb is contributing for this, and actually one thing that Airbnb is doing in places like the UK and the US, they have made agreements with banks in which landlords can't include the income from renting on Airbnb on the credit. So basically, when a bank gives you a mortgage, they consider you your income from work. But now you can say, my income is from working and from renting on Airbnb. And so the amount of money they give you is bigger. So and this is where the bubble is, because we have a situation in which if Airbnb stops and tourism stops, like in the pandemic, these people will face different difficulties to pay back the mortgage, for example. But then we also have people with accumulated capital that want to invest that capital in some place. And the short-term rental market gives them interesting possibilities, because now you buy a home just to deposit the capital, because it's safer than having that capital in the bank. But also you can rent to visitors, so you have an income from rent, but also because you can use it as a second home. So because the tenants, in this case the visitor, only stay for a few days, so you repossess the property every week, basically. So the property is also available for you, and so you, it's a flexible product. You combine like second home with renting with depositing capital, and this is a very interesting option for individual investors. But also then, because the profitability is so high, in special in certain places, like mature tourist destinations, that we are seeing institutional investors as well entering into this market, buying entire apartment blocks and converting entire buildings into Airbnb. There are different types of institutional investors also doing this. I estimate that in Barcelona, half of the supply is owned by institutional investors in this way. Also, it's important to consider that the present moment, in the last decade, we people call the generation rent. So basically, because after the 2008 financial crisis, so it's more and more difficult to buy a house, and people is going into the rental market. Considering that, the growth of short-term rental is making even more difficult for these people to rent homes. And so, and this is very important and relevant, going back to the question of inequality. Basically, we have a generational between landlords and tenants that are increasing the inequality between young people and older people who has bought homes in the past. This is something that I think will explode in the future, because a lot of our younger generation is not able to access housing, and they are transferring big portion of their incomes to paying rent, which is not sustainable.
Thank you very much for all these different threads, really complex processes that you have described. So if I understand well, we can so go back a few decades before and just summarize the beginnings of this process, that short-term rentals and real estate investments were a means for southern European cities to go out of the crisis, to facilitate some economic growth. And the policy changes coupled with different market mechanisms, the way platforms work with network effects. So this grew into a much bigger scale of business than maybe it was originally intended. And it unleashed this growth of inequalities, this struggle for local citizens to find a place to live, and these different trends with cheap flights and travel preferences, also mixed up with this economic fundamental of this whole phenomenon. And now, so can we say that now we are in a moment, especially in the cities of Southern Europe, where we can talk about some sort of crisis, some sort of major challenge for a way to go forward for new generations on the rental market and on the housing market?
Yes, well, we have a housing crisis, which is, I think, global, but especially affects the rental market. So the demand for rent in the rental market grew a lot in the last decade, and so prices grew, but also the interest of investors for this market, and also a policy framework that allowed this situation. And so in this context, the short-term rental market is another issue that is stressing even further the rental market. This is for sure. And so, and here maybe the contradiction in policy terms is that after the crisis of 2008, so the short-term rental market and tourism was seen as a way to stimulate the economy. And so a lot of things were done to facilitate investment, and back then a lot of people were saying, well, okay, but this will create a huge crisis, and also you are converting entire city center into tourist destination, which is not sustainable for the life of people who live there. And now, so they are realizing, oh yes, you were right. And the problem, so what we see now is that several places, not just in Southern Europe, also in other cities, are saying, oh, okay, we have a lot of short-term rentals. This is not sustainable for city life and for the rental market. So what we can do, we need to reduce, et cetera, et cetera. But now when you get into this situation, it's very difficult to go back. I mean, to reduce the supply, it means that people who invested will lost that short-term rental title and all the predictions that they made to imagine to repay the mortgage back will be like broken. Okay, on the one side, I think that we need to reduce the number of short-term rental supply. But on the other side, some investors have right in saying, this is not fair. You gave me a short-term rental title and now what? So this is the big challenge. How authorities will do this reduction in numbers? That we need to do that reduction, yes, I think for sure we need, because it's not sustainable. But that will create like a war between the private sector and government and social movement. Anyway, I think that we need to do something about it, because the housing crisis is very big in several places, and not just the housing crisis, also living in certain places.
Yeah, so it really strongly connects also to the discussion that is present in Poland related to the housing market and availability of homes. So in Poland, one of the major, mottos of this conflict is a saying that having a home is a right and not a product. And there's this conflict between an individual's rights and prospects of having a place to stay, especially in major cities, and on the other hand, all these unleashed economic processes that where maybe the market is not sufficient in guaranteeing a fair situation for all the citizens. That's a huge discussion everywhere in Europe, I think, and not only in the places most affected by short-term rentals. But before we jump in the policy questions, the policy debate, which is running pretty hot for quite some time, in your research, you often use different qualitative research methods. You have used fieldwork in numerous of your papers, so you have prepared interviews with different sides of this story, tenants, local residents, but also people who are renting these places, Airbnb hosts or investors of real estate. Can you maybe share with us some of the stories that you have heard, some of the situations that you have encountered in Barcelona and Lisbon, in these two cities where you have worked and lived?
Okay, thank you for the question, Christoph. Before I answer this question, I would like to go back to your previous comment about, because I think that you said something very interesting, which relates to the liberal philosophy of economics in which the free market provides the solution and the services that population need. I don't agree with that philosophy, and I just want to say a couple of things. For example, in Lisbon, using that liberal dogma, they said in 2011, we need to liberalize the rental law because landlords need to have more freedom in terms of what to do with the properties. And so if we create a framework that facilitates the life for landlords, so they will put those properties in the rental market and we will have more supply and prices will go down. That was the philosophy. And the opposite actually happened. So they gave all the power to landlords. And what happened is that landlords put the properties on the short-term rental market. Actually, the supply of rental in the rental market was reduced by a lot and prices were up. I mean, and this relates with the other question that you mentioned, which is the right of landlords to do whatever they want, apparently with the property, which is again part of this liberal philosophy. I think on the one hand that housing is an essential need in society. And we need to put limitations in terms of this right to do whatever they want with the properties, because actually it's not true. There are already limitations. For example, I cannot open a restaurant in my home. There are regulations to open a restaurant or a nightclub or something. But also in strategic sectors like energy, telecommunications, etc., there are very strict regulations. Because they are strategic sectors, and so the owners, the private sector, and the investors, they cannot do whatever they want. This liberal dogma doesn't apply for strategic sectors. We need to include housing into that strategic sectors to make sure that housing serves as a social need, which is the most important aspect of housing. Said this, which is a very complex issue, and going back to your question about stories, of course, there are a lot of stories. I did ethnographic work in Lisbon and Barcelona, and the stories are very different, again, if you are a tenant or you are a landlord. The question of tenants, so basically, on the one hand, I managed to interview tenants that were displaced by short-term rentals. And of course, this is an unfair situation. But obviously, is when I did interviews in touristified places, what you find there is people who stay, people who remain, people that were not evicted yet, but live in those places. And the stories are honestly very dramatic in sometimes, because to live in a place where you have an Airbnb upstairs or you are surrounded by Airbnbs is affecting the mental health of people. Even of landlords who are residents and don't participate in the short-term rental market, it's so stressful to live in such an environment that landlords are selling and going to live in different places. And they say, well, this is not fair. Why? I invested all my time, effort, love, emotion, capital in this place in the last 2 decades, and now I have to leave because it's impossible to live here. This is a dramatic thing. Also, the question of you cannot sleep, and when you have to go to school or to work early in the morning, so it affects your health. It's affecting the mental health of people. Basically, the pressure to live in those places. We need to relate with emotional implications and psychological implications of Airbnb and touristification in this case, not just with displacement. But then people, tenants who has been evicted, I remember one incredible story that when I interviewed an elderly woman in Barcelona, that she lived all her life in the same neighborhood, in the city center. So all their networks, social network, friends, family were in that place. So actually that neighborhood was her place. I mean, the place that she controls and she feels safe because she knows where to go, and the geographical meaning of place. And she was evicted and she went to live in a different peripheral neighborhood of Barcelona, completely isolated, completely alone. What she does every day is to take a bus and go back to her neighborhood, her place, and to be with her friends, family, social capital, etc., etc. Because for an elderly person to be displaced in that way and to find herself completely isolated in a place where you don't know and you don't know anybody, is basically something that as a human right should be avoided. I mean, because what we see in that those situation is a deterioration in her health, in her mental situation, in isolation, bad nutrition habits, etc., etc. So when you are an elderly person that you find herself completely alone in a place where you don't know anybody, that affects your life very hard. And so, and it's very, very interesting to see how her take a bus to avoid that situation every day, but every day, and go back to the city center. Well, and then on the contrary, when I interview hosts and landlords of short-term rentals, well, there are also different situations. There are different profiles of people. On the one hand, we have the middle class landlord who said, "Nah, this is I'm not an investor. This is just helping to pay my lifestyle. This is an extra income I have," which is the narrative, the official narrative of Airbnb. This exists, of course, because a lot of property owners are like small property owners. It's not like big companies that own hundreds of Airbnbs. But as I said before, so this is increasing the inequalities, and so these people is already privileged portion of society who have several properties, or at least two properties, and who always usually has a good job and good income. And this extra income is to maintain upper middle class lifestyle. And they justify this, "I'm not doing anything wrong. I just want to use this money to go on holidays, pay the university of my son, etc., etc." Which is okay, which is right, but this is their narrative. But then something that struck me was the narrative of like big investors in the city center of Lisbon saying, "Yes, residents should live. This is not a place to live. Like, leave us alone to make business here. You see that 70% of homes are on the short-term rental, so that implies a huge change in the life of the neighborhood. So now to live in this neighborhood is crazy. It's not appropriate to have a residential life in this place. This is a tourist district. And so recognize that this is a tourist district and leave us to make business." This is a narrative that exists, and I was like, "Oh my God, thank you for being so openly sincere." And then in Barcelona, I remember another landlord that had a building with 5 apartments, and she told me, "Well, this is great, and because of the liberalization of the rental market, it was very easy for me to evict my tenants and put these properties on Airbnb." And of course, she was celebrating that liberalization. So yeah, this is a struggle between renters and property owners. I see it in that way. And you can see that very clearly in the narrative of these two groups.
Yeah, thank you for these very powerful stories. And I think it helps our listeners to also grasp the huge impact of short-term rentals in different cities, including cities that are very important for you as well, Barcelona and Lisbon. It also showcases that on the one hand, we have the economic process, the financialization of homes, the way investments are pouring on the market, but also these other negative externalities that are affecting local residents, such as the mental health issues, this isolation, and also this disruption of local fabrics that is what makes a city tick, what makes cities a nice place to live. And I think it is difficult now to argue that regulations are not necessary to preserve places for local residents to live, to protect some of the housing supply, because I think we can all agree that something dangerous is developing across cities. This is probably a moment where we have to put some barriers on the growth of this phenomenon. This is and probably we are way past the moment where we can all argue that, well, regulations are necessary to mitigate negative effects and to correct some of the harmful ways our society and also economy works. And so your story is truly underlined that at the moment where people are losing their homes, not on a individual level, but we can observe this on a macro scale in the city, where 70% of a neighborhood has been transformed from local residents to guests and tourists and digital nomads. this is a truly a strong situation where regulators, where governments, where also local authorities should act and try to find a solution as well. You have described the difficulties related to that. How can you go back to a previous level? How can you also guarantee the rights of the investors, of people who invested in this market? How to find hero balance, social justice? So this is a complex problem. Probably we won't find a straightforward answer to this during our talk, but there are naturally different regulatory developments, both in Barcelona and also in Lisbon and in other cities of the world. Can you maybe find some best practices, some situations, some solutions that seem to work, that push the market in the right direction?
Thank you for the question. Very, also very complicated and long. Well, on the one hand, I think we need to see short-term rentals in relation with other issues, especially the hotels and the commercial landscape in those neighborhoods. So because for me, I mean, the short-term rental market per se is not just the problem, it's also the entire touristification of places, which also means that shops are transformed into tourist services, and also other housing are transformed into hotels, etc. And so, again, going back to the economic crisis of 2008, because the solution for the crisis was like this liberal approach, we need investment, everything is allowed. So short-term rentals were allowed without limitations, but also hotels and also restaurants and any kind of investment into the place. And so what happened is like a monoculture of tourist service in these city centers. And the point is like going back in reducing the supply of this monoculture will imply not just short-term rentals, but also hotels and also restaurants, ice cream shops, tapa bars, nightclubs, etc., etc. So it's a very, very, very complex point, because obviously that will imply that closing down businesses, like reducing the number of jobs, nobody will do that nowadays. It makes no sense in our economic system to do something like this. The point is that you need to act before that happens. And the only place that I know that act more or less quickly was Barcelona, that stopped the growth of short-term rental licenses in 2014, when they already saw a huge growth between 2011 and 2014, and they say, we stop. They don't give more licenses. And in 2017, they created a plan that also affects hotels, and hotels also stop, especially in the city center. And also they created like a land use plan to try to control the growth of commercial licenses in general. But the point is that, okay, they did that, but Barcelona is a mature destination, as I've mentioned before, and so already the place was touristified. At least they control, they could stop the growth of that. On the opposite, we see cities like Lisbon or cities like Italian cities where there is no regulation at all, where there is this monoculture of services for visitors in the housing and in the commercial landscape, which is nowadays in Lisbon, to open a restaurant in a street where there are already 14 restaurants is just to fill in an online form and they give you the license for the restaurant. There is no control whatsoever. And before the financial crisis, there were ratios. So the plan of the city said, in this neighborhood, the ratio between housing and restaurant is, imagine, 5 restaurants for 100. I don't know exactly the number, but something like this. That was liberalized, again, to allow the growth of this. So the point is, now in a city such as Lisbon, I think public policies will do nothing to reduce this, because that will reduce employment and businesses, and so nobody will do that. The only way will be with that, again, a mobility crisis like COVID, and that the market will work alone. But that obviously put us in a very, very vulnerable situation in which we cannot control the future of the city. That is something that should have been avoided in the past. And a lot of people were saying in the past, we are going in the wrong direction. The lessons for this is that there are still a lot of cities and places that want to be like Lisbon and Barcelona. And that's the problem. They want, we want to be part of this, and we want to be on the map, and so we want to, again, do this. But, okay, I think that I understand that the power of tourism to stimulate places, but where is the limit, where is the equilibrium? And that is, and sadly, people only regulate or mitigate the externalities when it's too late, and that is always have been like that. There is a different situation in places where there is not a register. I mean, in Spain and in Portugal, we have a short-term rental register. So if you are a property owner and you want to do short-term rentals, so you need a license, and government give you the license straight away because there is no limitation. Well, in Barcelona now there are limitations, but in other places it's still open, the register. But in other places, like in Italy, in several cities of the United States, in the UK, there is not a register. So the property owners were operating on Airbnb, and maybe there is a control of the taxes they pay, okay? But there is not authorities, they didn't give anything, a title to them. So there was kind of illegal, something like this, like a informal market somehow. In those places, it's much easier to intervene, which is basically what happened in New York last month or 2 months ago. So there were not a register, and now the municipality say, okay, we will create a register. And the conditions to be included in that register are very strict. And actually in New York, the condition is to rent on Airbnb, you can only rent your main residence, and you have to be present in the house. So you can only rent a room, you cannot rent an entire apartment. If you want to rent an entire apartment, you cannot include in the register. So basically this registration forbid in one day the entire short-term rental market, basically. Because they didn't give titles in the past, so investors cannot say anything about this, which is very different than in Spain and Barcelona. So basically what New York is saying, we want to go back to this original model of the narrative of the sharing economy. And it's very, very funny and ironic to see that Airbnb is the main player who is complaining about this regulation in Airbnb. So even if New York is using the main narrative for Airbnb, Airbnb is against it, which means that it was actually a narrative, not a reality. And I think that other places will do something similar if they want to reduce the number. In Italy and the UK, for example, they could do something like that. And I think, and I know that some municipalities in those places are thinking also in that way, in that direction.
Thank you very much, Augustine. So there is some hope for creating smart regulations in cities where the problem and the short-term rentals have not developed into such a huge scale as in Lisbon, for example. So registries are probably a thing that cities could implement, that they could think how to mitigate the growth of this market in the future. And so this may be something interesting also for cities in Poland, where short-term rentals have yet to be regulated, and where there's at this stage rather an unregulated market where it's fairly easy to set up a new short-term rental. So this can be a way to think about now before things get out of hand. And there are some rumors about European regulations, about a framework for providing access to local governments and cities, access to data from these platforms. So that can also facilitate the enforcement of existing rules and rules that can be taken into place. So there are some measures and some processes that are happening right now that I think local citizens should act upon. They should observe, maybe encourage actively their local representatives to act before it's too late.
Yes, but I'm a bit skeptical about this European regulation, because basically they took Portugal as an example, as a model, and what they say is we need to create a register where everybody can register, so local authorities knows who is renting. Okay, but there's not a limitation. So if everybody can register, we will have the same problem. This is one thing. And the second thing is that this sharing of data, they only share aggregate data, but not the address and the VAN number of people who is renting because of privacy issues. And so I don't think it will facilitate enforcement of the regulation. I mean, in Barcelona, for example, they and other cities like Amsterdam, Paris, Berlin, municipalities have created like enforcement teams with inspectors that go and check door by door who is doing illegally the short-term rentals, etc., etc. And it's very, very challenging and difficult to find, actually, because platforms don't share again with the excuse of privacy. So we need more collaboration, which it's a term that basically is very tricky, you know, because when we think about collaboration, we mean recognizing that these powerful digital platforms have more power than local authorities to implement the regulation, which is something crazy. And we are asking like a favor, please collaborate with us. I think something different should happen, which is we need this data because you are taking a lot of money from our housing market. And indeed, in Europe, Airbnb only pays taxes in Ireland, which is a tax haven. So they are profiting a lot from us and not contributing to society. And so, and then we ask them the favor to collaborate. So I think it's a fair system. And then the question is that we need a register, perfect, but we need conditions for that register. One condition can be like in New York, but also there are other conditions that you can implement, like ratios of spatial limitations. For example, in certain neighborhoods, the maximum amount of short-term rentals can be sheet number. These kind of limitations are very, very important. It's not just the register. Because when you see this register implemented by the European Union, they sell it as something like transparency, clear market for all. It's not like this. This clear market for property owners, basically.
Thank you. So it's very important points were raised now for this final part of our talk. So that regulatory frameworks need to have, I think, a clear set of also goals. So what kind of goals do we want to achieve with these regulations? What kind of negative effects we want to forego? And I think it is very important point that you raised, that information or data in itself is not enough, and policymakers should really observe what has happened in different parts of the world, also use empirical evidence that is already out there, what kind of regulations worked, what were the overall effects in different cities. And it's important to put all these things together and create mandatory solutions for platforms and be less dependent on narratives, on different ideas, and put on some solid set of rules that can preserve cities, also cities with a lot of tourists.
Yes, and I just want to introduce a new element into the equation to complicate even further the thing, which is the question of monthly rentals and temporary rentals and people who travel for a few months, not for a few days. This phenomenon has grown a lot also, especially after the COVID, remote working, digital nomads, etc., etc. And what we are seeing is that in cities that put limitations, like in New York or Barcelona, the supply is going into these monthly rentals. So basically 2, 3, 4 months. So the point here is that the property owner repossesses the property very quickly. And that repossession allows it to increase prices and to control the asset, basically. So they don't want unstable tenants. So the point is that this tourist market is making a situation in which housing is losing its social function, and this is the big problem we have. But the point is that in New York, for example, after that strict regulation, the number of Airbnb listings has remained the same, almost the same. The difference is that 20,000 properties are still available on the platform, but you can only rent them for 30 days or more, because a short-term rental license gives you the possibility to rent 30 days, less than 30 days. So if we want to retake the social function of housing, we need to do something about temporary rentals as well, which is completely not regulated. And I think I don't know any place in the world that has thought how to regulate this. And I know it's a huge challenge, but also we need to think about that.
Yeah, thank you very much, Agustin. I think that during our discussion, we managed to highlight what are the origins of short-term rentals, how they transformed cities, what kind of problems they have maybe not caused, but certainly strengthened, and how it affected local residents. And we provided a brief summary on the regulatory discussion and also some questions for the future. So what kind of new type of rental types may emerge after short-term rentals, so these mid-term rentals or these monthly rentals that you have mentioned. So an ever transforming phase in the real estate market and in our cities. So Agustin, thank you very much for our discussion. It has been a true pleasure, and I think a very insightful discussion. Thank you very much. I would like to also thank our listeners, and today's guest was Agustin Kokola-Gant from the University of Lisbon. And see you in our future episodes of our podcast, D-Lab on Digital Societies. Thank you very much.
The Lab on Digital Societies.